And in the end, I thought, well, if nobody's listening, what's the point in living? So I tried to sort of, you know, find a way of getting out of that whole situation by not living at all.
Where were you at mentally? What was going through your mind?
I've had enough of this, and I hated the world. I just found that everything around me was just really massively depressing. I just thought, nobody's listening.
Apparently, no one grows up wanting to run a record label, but this gent went against the grain. From starting his journey in NME to assisting his artist to rising fame.
Can you tell us about the origin story of Fierce Panda?
We had no idea what we were doing. We were just churning stuff out. The contracts didn't exist.
What is your story with Coldplay then?
If you'd said to me at the end of 2019, you'll end up at South by Southwest in 5 years' time, I'd have laughed your pants off. But here I am.
Greetings. I'm Ashley Samuels McKenzie.
And I'm Charles Parkinson.
And welcome to How I Became,
where we unveil the unscripted journeys of inspirational figures.
If you enjoy the show, could you do one thing? Subscribe. Wherever you are, just click the subscribe or follow button. That simple act can help us grow the podcast in a big way, and we need your support to do it. And if you really want to help play a part in our growth, rate us on Spotify or leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It would mean the world. Thank you. This episode is brought to you by Uber, shaping the future for consumers as they go anywhere and get anything. Advertising on Uber connects brands with hundreds of millions of people using Uber around the world in the moments that move them most. To learn more about what we can do for your brand, visit uber.com/advertising.
Well, let's dive into your story.
And thank to you begin very much. With,
to begin with, we're going to share a poem that Ash has written about you.
Thank you. That's kindly. Yeah.
Apparently, no one grows up wanting to run a record label, but this gent went against the grain. From starting his journey in NME to assisting his artist to rising fame. On his journey, he's had ups and downs, like a plane through turbulence. Even had a stint on radio, but it turns out that role wasn't set to be permanent. It takes a particular set of skills to see what will be popular in the near future. Especially when you're coming from the times before social media, smartphones, and computers. He's now the owner of an animal you may find in the forest or maybe Wakanda. Introducing Simon Williams, CEO and founder of the record label Fierce Panda.
That's absolutely beautiful.
Welcome.
Did you rhyme that with Wakanda?
Wakanda.
Wakanda.
Yeah.
Okay, what's Wakanda?
Wakanda is the fictional place where Black Panther's from in Marvel.
Oh,
it was actually
wow.
Charles's recommendation. We threw it in there.
We're trying to work out what to rhyme with panda. And we came up with Wakanda. And
we got it. We got it. So welcome, everyone. We're now going to tell... Well, we're now going to have 30 minutes telling the story of Fierce Panda.
So we are here, just to give some context to this chat, we're here to celebrate life and to we want you all to leave here cherishing life even more than you did when you came in today. That's the goal. But let's take it back to where did life begin for you? Set the scene of the life you were born into. And I should say, Simon Williams is an author. This is an incredible, inspiring book. And we're going to give you eventually a little preview of it. But the deep story is here is amazing. You can get it on Amazon.
You read it on the plane.
I read it on the plane. And I was inspired. So let's get into it. Where did life begin? Set the scene of the life you were born into.
So I grew up in East London, in Clapton, which is in Hackney, which is now the hippest place in the entire of London. You can't afford to live there. And and then when the construction of the book is basically when I was five, my father killed himself, which I thought was a thing that happened to young boys. And then it took me about 50 years before I got therapy. And then I saw a therapist, and, you know, professional person. And he said, so we had about 55 minutes of chat about the music industry and, you know, Coldplay and da-da-da-da-da. And then right at the end, just literally with 5 minutes to go, he said, so tell me about your dad. And I said, oh, he threw himself in the River Thames when I was five. And it just transformed the entire conversation for those last 5 minutes, because he just said, that's been... in you bubbling away for 50 years.
Had you told anyone?
People knew, but it's like no one knew how to, you know, it's, you know, every person I've ever, you know, so many people I've known, the family split up, people move away. It's not an unusual thing to be a single child, is it?
No.
But it's just never, I didn't think it was an issue. I never needed to talk to anyone about it, apart from my only subconscious was when I got a daughter, I had my own daughter, and then I noticed that every hillock that was there. So if my dad was born in a certain year, I've got past that. If he got married in a certain year, I've got past that. If he killed himself in a certain year and I lived beyond that, you know. But it was a very subconscious thing, and no one else really knew about it because it's just too self-indulgent, isn't it? Oh, by the way, this is the anniversary of my father's death. So if I'm still alive tomorrow, that's an absolutely marvellous achievement. It's not going to go down well, is it?
But it does play a key pivotal role in your life, and we're going to get to your experience with that. Can you tell us about the origin story of Fierce Panda? Because you previously were Enemy. How did you go from being an Enemy to launching your own record label?
So we were just young cats. So 1994. At the Enemy, so before, somewhere between grunge and Britpop, we invented a scene called New Wave of New Wave, which basically involved essentially two bands, Smash and These Animal Men, who both sounded a bit like The Clash. But and the scene was minuscule, but out of it, it was essentially the launching pad for Britpop. These kids suddenly turned up with Adidas and amphetamines in Camden Town, and then within a year, you couldn't move in North London for kids wearing Adidas and doing amphetamines. Then he moved on to cocaine, but that was a different world that we weren't involved in. And but that was the start point. We just thought it was such a lovely little thing, and we gave it. So we essentially set up Fierce Panda to release one record as a tribute to that scene, which is why we're called Fierce Panda, which is why, et cetera, et cetera. If we'd known that 30 years later, we'd still be going, we might have given it a slightly better name. Or not, as the case may be.
Yeah.
Can you get better than Fierce Panda?
I don't think so.
What's the best record company name of all time?
Fierce Panda.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
And for anyone here who may not know entirely what the role of a record label is, could you explain a bit more about what the functions of it was?
Well, I had no idea whatsoever. So when we first started out, we just did all these little compilation EPs. So the first EP was Smash These Animal Men. The second EP, we did loads of teenage bands. So we had like Supergrass, Ash, who are playing later tonight, Credit to Nation, Gorky's I Got It Monkey. Then we did a punk EP with Green Day, then a girl EP with Lush, then a mod EP with the Blue Tones. And it just seemed like, I just found it like really good fun. We had no idea what we were doing. There was no money involved. All these EPs just basically broke even. And then after a year, we had like 5,000 fans just going like, oh yeah. But except we didn't. We'd sold 5,000 records, but it was the same people just bought the whole lot. So we had 1,000 fans, but it was still a good starting point. Yeah, and then we moved on. Then we did Placebo, Kaniki, Three Colours Red, Embrace, Idlewild, Coldplay, just roared through the whole thing. And it was just, we were just morons. We were the most stupid record company of all time. We had no idea what we were doing. We were just churning stuff out. The contracts didn't exist. And all the bands just pissed off to major labels. That was the job. I think there was one point we counted up, there were 72 bands went on to bigger labels. And that was in about, 2000.
What is your story with Coldplay then? What's the story there?
The story is that no one else wanted to sign them because they thought they were student idiots. They weren't idiots. They knew they were students, so they were really smart. But they looked terrible. Chris Martin, when he was playing to 150 people, he had a tank top and like really big Leo Sayer hair, corduroy trousers. Oh, this is getting worse and worse, isn't it? I'm looking back at it. Why the hell did we get involved in this? He was playing an acoustic guitar when no one played acoustic guitars, and he was cracking jokes when no one cracked jokes. I mean, London in 98, 99 was so weird. It was so, the front covers of the Enemy in 1999 were like Gay Dad, Campag Velocet, and Ultrasound. And two of those bands are on Fierce Panda. So, you know, there's some glory to be had, but everyone else sees it as the worst year possible. But, you know, post-Britpop in the UK, it was calamitous. The whole thing was falling. The majors didn't know what they were doing, and no one else knew what they were doing. But Coldplay, out of that, we just put the single out, and it got on the radio, and then everything changed.
What single was that?
We did Brothers and Sisters, did a little EP in 1999. And it changed their entire career. It changed everything about them. It was just, as soon as people heard it, you know, and that's the thing, you know, as much as A&R people like me go, you know, the live thing's the most important angle, 99% of people back then just heard it on the radio. They weren't down the, you know, Camden Falcon in front of like 20 other people. They were listening to it on Radio 1, and their ears just went, this is absolutely marvellous. And then the major labels' ears went, this is even more marvellous, and then off they went.
So we're going to hear from you. What are your proudest moments of the first 25 years of Fierce Panda up to 2019? What stands out to you?
When you run an indie label, I don't think pride comes into it. I think the main thing I get from friends is the fact that Fierce Panda is still going after 30 years. That seems to be a real component. They go like, whatever, whether you're a baker or a, you know, a butcher or a candlestick maker, to keep going for 30 years is absolutely sensational. And then in that time, you've got so many peaks and so many troughs, and then more peaks and more troughs. You can't. There's no time to feel proud. You know, if you sat there going, "This is by definition, if you're feeling proud, you think you've nailed it. But you can't do that. There's always another band, or that band's about to leave you, or that band's about to kill you, you've got no time. It's a ghastly business. I mean, really, don't set up a label. It's an awful, awful thing. It's torture.
Tell us what happened in the year 2019. Where were you at mentally? What was going through your mind?
So I went through a little phase of just going, I've had enough of this, and I hated the world, and I hated the music. I really hated the music industry. Because it was just, you know, streaming had taken over so much and Spotify dominated the world. And I just found that everything around me was just really massively depressing. All my bands were depressed. Every person I knew in the music industry was depressed. And I found myself soaking it up more and more and more. And in the end, I just thought, I just thought nobody's listening. And in the end, I thought, well, if nobody's listening, what's the point in living? So I tried to sort of, you know, find a way of getting out of that whole situation by not living at all. And luckily, my skills at, you know, attempting suicide were about as effective as my skills at A&R, in the sense that I'm still here, you know. So,
would you be able to share what the experience was and what you went through during that?
I just went through a very, very, right at the end of 2019, I just went through a very, very, very logical phase. Very, very streamlined. This is what I'm going to do. There was no cry for help. I didn't do any post-outs. I didn't just go, you know, oh, I'm feeling a bit sad. I just thought, I'm going to do this. And I worked out where it would be, you know, if I'd spent more time actually working on my own bands than my own suicide attempt, I'd probably be a bit more of a successful person. But in the end, I was kind of like, you know, I was rescued in time and then hauled off to hospital for a couple of weeks, and then finally met some really, 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 really nice people who could sort of help my brain.
And there was quite a chance moment, because your wife hadn't heard from you for a day, and she was worried. And she'd messaged a friend of yours who wasn't supposed to be in London, but happened to be. What's the story there?
So we've got some good friends in North London, and one of them, Russell and Sarah, they basically, she lives in Leicester. So the idea is they went up to the family home to see her mum, and they'd had some kind of falling out, and basically, Russell had just got in the car and just driven back to London. But if he'd been in Leicester, if he'd stayed in Leicester, they hadn't had a row, I'd be dead, because he wouldn't have been there just around the corner from the office.
He texted you, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, he was the one. It was like, are you there? And it's like, do you know what? I've got, it's, it's really, it's a weird thing to say, but it's really difficult to kill yourself. You know, I gave it my best shot, and it's just, it's a real tough nut to crack because it's not online, is it? Hello, Google. How many paracetamols do I need to take? You know, it's kind of, it's not on the, it's not on the, you know, the colorful net rather than the dark web. And, you know, I spent like 18 hours just basically battering myself in various ways. I got to the point I could throw myself out this window, but I just thought I'm going to end up landing on a really old lady and I'll end up surviving and I'll kill her. And then I'll look really bad in the local press. The things that go through your brain when you've had enough.
What would you say to someone who's starting to get these kind of thoughts?
I'd say just talk to people and all those Samaritans. We, you know, in the UK we've got Samaritans and stuff like that, and it's a weird, in the UK, even in the UK, for like getting you know, psychological attention, it's tough. You know, I know people, they said, you know, it's a 6-month waiting list. I got private help. It was basically, if you don't do this, we're not letting you out of hospital. So I know other people really, really, really struggling, and I know over here it's even harder because, you know, the whole mental health thing and the medical situation. But the main thing is kind of, I mean, there's two things. One, go and talk to people, and two, it can turn out okay. If you'd said to me at the end of 2019, you're really going to balls this up, but you'll end up at South by Southwest in 5 years' time, I'd have laughed your pants off. But here I am.
Here you are.
Here I am, yeah. Woo! Laughing your pants off.
Yeah, make some noise for that.
So you do decide to, because Russell texts you, and you do decide to text Russell back, and you let him know you're not in a good way. And he said, well, come and see me. So you make your way over to his house, and he calls the ambulance, and you're taken to hospital very quickly, and it's now a mission to keep you alive, which they do. You're here today.
Spoiler alert.
What is your thoughts about the life now? You know, what's your perspective on life, going through what you've been through, that might be a message of inspiration for people here?
Well, I've never gone for the kind of, you know, the inspirational vibe. Is just, you know, I just wrote a book because I had to, and it was fun, and it started off with my dad. It was a psychotherapist said, you know, just write some words about your dad, and it was like all of a sudden the memories come flooding back, because once you've almost died, then it makes, you know, the memories start really, really vibing, and they go, oh, that's interesting, isn't it? And then it kind of, everything just poured out. I mean, that entire book was written in about a year, 80,000 words in a year.
Wow.
Which is, you know, fast work even by my gibbering standards. That doesn't mean that every now and again it's not in the back of my head. I know it's never going to go away, no matter what meds I'm on, no matter what care and attention people give me. It's still there. You know, you have the bad days and you have the good days, but mostly, you know, this is quite cool, isn't it? This is something that I never expected to happen. And so you have that, you know, that kind of wide-eyed look at life, and which makes everything, you know, it makes every day a little bit more fun.
Mm, yes. And do you...
And every band a little bit more exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, we are here to really have a very difficult... This is an uncomfortable conversation to have, but it's an important one, because I think a lot of people do go through challenging things mentally and do suffer in silence. And being silent about it is not the way. And so we're here to celebrate life and talk about how things can be positive for the future. What are you excited about for the future, for yourself and for Fierce Panda? We're celebrating 30 years. What are you excited about in the future?
Well, I guess the weirdest thing is that the book's called How Not to Run a Record Company. And then in the sense that we were running along for 29 years without having one hit record. Which is, if a record company's got one job, it's to have hits. And we didn't manage that at all. And then last year, after the book came out, we got top 15, well, top 14 in the UK album chart with Ash. So A, the title of the book is already redundant. We can get rid of the not, and I can finally say how to run a record company. And thereon, it's just, again, with all the bands here, with the Neon Waltzes and the China Bears and the Ashes and the Manatees, it's just a joy to be alive with all those people.
Woo! Round of applause for that.
Music is the answer.
And do you have, I mean, you must have developed some skills in spotting talent. You've spotted some amazing talent over the years. Any advice? We've got lots of music people in the audience today. Any advice for how to spot the next successful band?
Always ignore what everyone else is saying. So, you know, a lot of the bands who've started out on indie labels, whether it be Coldplay, whether it be Green Day, whether it be Oasis, major labels would have passed on them. They don't understand it. They don't understand the module. They don't understand the weirdness. You know, I understand our role in the world. You know, our essence of the Fierce Panda essence came from when I grew up in the 80s. You know, so many bands moved on from Rough Trade. They moved on to major labels. They moved on from Creation. They moved on from, you know, Mute. They moved, you know, there were so many brilliant indie labels where they couldn't hold on to the bands when someone turned up with a ginormous check for, like, you know, £60,000, which normally ruined the band's careers. And we just followed that model, and it was just, I mean, you know, as a business model, as I say, it's absolutely cretinous and useless, but that's what we got from, you know, Coldplay were passed over by the music industry, Keane were passed over by the music industry. They didn't see the potential, they didn't see the talent, they just looked at them and just went, he looks like a fat Ali Jones, you know, whereas I just thought, he does look like a fat Ali Jones, but the music's amazing. And once you're on the radio, people can't see a fat Ali Jones. They just hear his amazing voice.
What is your... We've got lots of people from the music industry here. What's your message to the music industry about what you think needs to change?
I don't think anything needs to change. I think we just need to stop the change. The change is so fast and so frightening in terms of, you know... Even in the UK, every week there's another broadsheet piece about bands not being able to survive, bands not being able to live, bands not being able to subsist them as bands themselves. They've all got jobs. They've all got this, you know. It's a very, very, very broken system. But I think the greatest quote I heard recently was from Joe from Idols, and he just said, and here's a band who basically spent 10 years trying to sound like the Maccabees. And then one day they just thought, why don't we stop sounding like the Maccabees and start sounding like what we want to sound like? And now they play to 10,000 people because they're honest and they're valid and their judgment was absolutely spot on. And his quote now is, just treat it, any level you're at, just treat it like an absolute hobby. And then one day you'll be playing to 10,000 people and then it's not a hobby anymore.
Great advice and a great quote.
Thanks.
There we go. So, yeah, I think there's anything you're going to get from this, that if you are struggling with anything at all, speak to people. Don't do it alone. You are not alone going through what you're going through. And there's a beautiful life to be celebrated. We're celebrating 30 years of Fierce Panda, celebrating the future of music. And that's a message. We have a message.
You've also got one more thing, which is, as an A&R person or someone running a record company, you're completely torn between bands, artists who have like mad, crazy egos who want to kill you, and then other bands who are just completely collapsing in their own arses, thinking we can't even survive. And you're stuck right in the middle of that. And that's when you're really soaking it up. You know, you're talking about if we've got 12 and a half bands on Fierce Panda, that's almost 50 people. That's almost 50 people that you're responsible for, you know. And when in a music industry that's dying on its ass, it's kind of tough. But then some people do like being on Fierce Panda, and four of them are all here today.
Okay, we've got some words, a poem that Ashley has written while we've been chatting the last few minutes. It's amazing. And after that poem, we've got a video for you, Simon.
Very special one. Trauma is like a boiling pot, and over years it bubbles and bubbles. finding a venture to push up new artists as risen stars from out of the rubble. 3 decades of the fiercest panda, like a lion tamer at a zoo. Getting through some of the toughest times and at the 11th hour being rescued. Onwards and upwards for a second lease of life. And 80,000 words in a book, a story that brings your past to light. You can make each day fun, so smile when you can. It can help you mend. So now you've heard from us and Simon, and we have a little message for you from some of your old friends.
Hi Steve, hi Simon, this is Chris here. I think this is playing at South by Southwest, that's what I'm told that I'm filming this for. But I love you guys, and I think I'm congratulating Simon on being honoured by Steve, is that correct? Well, either way, I honour both of you. I hope you're talking about the gift that you both have to see what no one else can see in young acts. I saw a video of us the other day when we were 21 and I couldn't work out how we got signed. So I wonder what you're talking about on stage. Maybe it's that gift of seeing the future. Either way, I'm so grateful for you both. This is way too long. I love you. Happy birthday.
Hello, we are Desperate Journalist.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Fierce Panda.
Thank you for the good times.
Hello, Fierce Pandas, and a very, very happy 30th birthday from myself and the rest of the Manatees. Simon, to play even the smallest part in what you've built over the last 30 years is a huge honour and privilege for us. And to be associated you is something we will never not be grateful for. Thank you to all of the hard work that you and Chris do for musicians and artists at every stage of their career. It really isn't lost on us. Happy birthday. We'll join you for a few drinks in Texas.
Yo, 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 it's your boys Neil Waltz in the house. We're so happy to be part of this Fierce Panda 30th anniversary at South by Southwest. Yeah!
Hey Panda people, it's Tim Wheeler from Ash here, and I want to say a very happy 30th anniversary to Fierce Panda Records. Well done, Simon, for surviving and thriving. And yeah, I can't believe it's 30 years since we were on the Crazed and Confused EP back there in 1994. And here we are back in the label with our latest album, Race the Night. So what a journey it's been. It's been such a pleasure to be there with you, and looking forward to the future.
Hey Simon, happy 30th anniversary of Fierce Panda. Ivan and Fraser here from China Bears. We're so excited to bring out our debut album Participation Trophy with Fierce Panda this summer. Simon, your passion for new bands is so inspiring, and we're so proud to be on a label such as Fierce Panda that's making such a difference to the music industry in the UK, still after 30 years. So happy anniversary and good for you.
Round of applause.
Round of applause.
Simon,
Simon
Williams, everybody.
And Fierce Panda.
Sorry, I'm not actually dead yet, but you know, thank you. As eulogies go, that's great. You know, yeah, I can die happy now, but not again, not yet. We'll go with that. That's book 3. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, South by Southwest.